They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome to the show, Inside the Bubble, second episode recording from the NBA campus in Orlando, and pleased to be joined this week by two of my bubble mates, Tania Ganguly from the Los Angeles Times and Kyle Goon from the Orange County Register. Tania, also a avid shopper at Project Runway. What is it called?
Rent the Runway.
Goon answers that quickly.
I can't believe you've never heard of this, Mannix.
I mean,
have you spent 5 minutes around Tania? Because you should have heard of this by now, man.
It's not just me. There's like tons of reporters who use this and talk about it. Haven't you heard? AOC uses it because, you know, you can get a bunch of suits and not have to pay for them.
Yeah, but
I'm just saying, you got to be the leading vocal supporter.
No, I'm definitely not. There's like dozens of, there are like Malika does it. My friend Christy Regan, another reporter, she does it. They actually are like ambassadors, like Rent the Runway ambassadors. I just, you know, needed some extra clothes for the bubble.
I mean, but you've seen me, right? Like I wear the same sweatpants every day.
But most of us want to look better than you.
It's not a high bar. I don't exactly set the standard all that high for that. But yeah, you were carrying a couple of bushels of clothing right there, leaving the
I was impressed that you finally wore a new set of pants today. That was exciting.
I did. I changed from the long sweatpants to the short sweatpants. And after laundry day on Thursday, I'll go back to the long sweatpants because there was like food starting to get stuck to the long sweatpants. So that had to be changed there. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. We are on week two here in out of quarantine in the bubble, just the day before the start of the regular season. If you're listening to this, actually, it will be the day of the start of the regular season. Before we get into the basketball stuff, I want to ask both of you, and Tania, we'll start with you. The bubble experience, has it been what you expected, different than you expected? I mean, how would you characterize it?
I think it's generally been what I expected. You know, the restrictions on us are a little bit onerous and annoying, and I think that I expected for it to be annoyed by that. I think that you also get, there's so much opportunity for, like, access, the kind of access that you wouldn't normally get when you're at a regular practice and there's like 50 other media members, which happens a lot for the Lakers. So it's been nice to see things that we wouldn't normally see at the games. We're pretty close and can hear a lot, and that's been really fun, and we're just kind of around everything. I think a lot of these games, once they get started, it's going to be a lot of fun because there's just so much we have access to that we don't during a normal season.
Yeah, and Kyle, you guys have to deal with this more than reporters that cover most teams, but you know, whether it's 40, 50 people in that Lakers locker room every single night or at every single practice, it's often just a street fight just get through there. I mean, I've been, for whether it's the Lakers or any other team, just it's been great for me just to walk into these practices. And PR guys have been mostly accommodating, you know, for me anyway, with, you know, getting 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there with different guys. It's almost like, I think I've said this before, but it's almost like a basketball writer's fantasy camp kind of out there. I mean, you're not getting LeBron, but you weren't getting LeBron anyway. So like it's, if you're getting, you know, one-on-one time with a lot of different people, there's real value in it.
Yeah. You know, I think about how long ago it was in the world when we would be by LeBron's locker waiting for him to change. And like on either side of me, I'm packed in like it's a subway car after a Yankees game, and a camera's knocking me in the back of the head. And like all this like weird kind of spacing stuff that we dealt with covering a team as popular as the Lakers. So yeah, definitely to Tanya's point, I think there's just more accessibility, more space, obviously required space, right? But I think the other thing about it is it's the other way. I mean, the players are kind of less stressed out by our presence in some fashion, because I found guys more willing to talk, especially in these one-on-one situations, especially about a lot of things that are happening off the court and in reference to social justice and racial equity. You know, it's just a little more relaxed than the LA media environment, where there's, you know, a lot of people, a lot of mouths to feed, so to speak, right? Of just and just a large collection of humanity right in a player's space. So, you know, and I know it's kind of a tough situation for a lot of people who are trying to cover this from home. But as one of, as being these privileged few with Tanya and you, Chris, yeah, it's been a wild experience to kind of see the difference when you have the ability to step back.
Yeah, I think if I had any...
We get elbowed a lot less.
A lot less.
Maybe LeBron.
I think if I had any message to the powers that be in the NBA, just a small tweak, if you could just open up the hallway between the Coronado Springs kitchen and where the players practice, you would save us a lot of aggravation in walking outside and walking around. So NBA people that listen to this, and I know you're out there, that's one tweak I think I'd like to make. Tanya, you know, we've been here, you know, for almost 3 weeks. Players been here a little bit longer, you know, having to adjust to a new lifestyle without, you know, friends and family around, and a lot of monotony, kind of Groundhog's Day every single day up until this point. How do you think the players, from the ones you've talked to about, you know, the environment, how do you think they've adapted to it so far?
I think that they've adapted pretty well to it. I mean, I think like this is a kind of thing that has a cumulative effect, I think. They've been here since, the Lakers have been here 3 weeks. Many teams have been here a little bit longer than that. And I think that playing games against each other was helpful in kind of breaking up the monotony of just like being here and seeing all the same people all the time and not really having an escape. But, you know, I think the real test is going to come as time goes on, like as they keep having to do this, as they keep, you know, like when they have a tough game and there's no escape. How does that affect you when they have like, you know, when the families start to arrive, I think that that's going to help too. But then that's a point when you're going to have the other question, which is how do you continue to keep this being a safe environment? How do you continue to make sure that they've been very good about not having an outbreak inside this bubble, not having the bubble pop. I heard someone use that phrase, like not having that happen. That's when they've been really good at that. But like, is it going to be harder when families get here? You know, I don't know.
Yeah. And to that point, like, I don't think until this week with the Lou Williams incident, which I'm sure we're all champing at the bit to get into. But like, I think people just have this misconception that building the bubble is over somehow. Like, oh, they did it. They got the negative tests. And now like the work is done. Well, it's never done, because people keep coming in. And to Tanya's point, that second reentry, when all these families are coming in, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people potentially, like that is a huge moment for the NBA. I mean, having the tip off tomorrow is a great thing for the NBA and a huge success, but it just, the work does not stop. And that's a whole other second kind of construction phase of the bubble. When you think of making sure those people are tested, those people are properly quarantined, they're obeying all the rules. I mean, it just is not going to stop until this is over.
You know, one thing one GM brought up to me today when talking about kind of like just the, how everybody's kind of on top of each other. It's like, we all saw kind of the trash talk between the Raptors and Blazers in the exhibition game, felt like a regular season or a playoff type atmosphere. And if it can be that in that game. And you know, this GM told me, he's like, you know, what happens, you know, when these two teams have like an intense game against each other, then they passed each other on the way to breakfast like the next morning. Like usually you're just, yeah, you're done. Like you have an intense game and then you go your separate ways. You don't see that team for weeks, if not months. Now you might see them like 10 hours later. It feels like that, Tanya, is like a part of this whole experience that could get interesting as the familiarity with these teams, yeah, start to increase.
Yeah. Like what if you get into some kind of situation where there's like somebody has like a really bad like flagrant foul against somebody else, and then that has a huge impact on the game, or somebody gets hurt because of that. And I mean, I think there's so much potential for awkward Jared Dudley brought this up a while ago, like when everyone was kind of enamored with this idea of like, oh, all the teams are together and they all like are walking past each other and sharing the same hotel and sharing eating spaces. Jared, this was maybe a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago. He's like, well, once you get into the playoffs and like you're sharing an elevator with these guys that you just beat or just lost to, like those are sensitive moments for players. Like they don't want that like brought right into their face right away again. And that's exactly what's going to happen in this environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Kyle.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I think the number one enemy of most players in the bubble right now seems to be Kendrick Perkins, because he seems to be starting the most beef. But I mean, I think it will be just weird. I will say, though, I think the Raptors and Blazers situation has been an outlier. I do wonder about the situations that Tanya brings up, where somebody potentially gets hurt, somebody potentially, you know, maybe there's just emotions are running high. But I kind of feel like this environment has made the players more collegial, and you see a lot of like very friendly conversations. I mean, that might change when we get into seeding games, and it certainly will change in the playoffs. But I've viewed it as, hey, there's a lot of friendly conversations going on in the court, and a lot of guys are just happy to see each other.
I think that happens, but like, I mean, there are some players that just aren't like that. Rajon Rondo and Chris Paul come to mind for me. They had some interactions that I couldn't, like, imagine if that happened. Remember the opener last year, was it? Was it last year?
The home opener, yeah.
Home opener, when that whole thing happened and Rajon and Chris got in. Chris said that Rajon spit at him, Rajon said he didn't, and it started this huge fight. Imagine like that happening, and then you have to you walk into the hotel at the same time together. Like, I just can envision stuff like that, something like that. Like, I mean, obviously Rondo's not here right now, but a situation like that is like where I'm thinking like the awkwardness would settle in.
And I tell you, I love the reason I love the Rondo Chris Paul rivalry. I was there at the beginning of it. And you mentioned Kendrick Perkins. When Perkins was playing for the Celtics, I remember this. I feel like I started it to a degree. Like, I walked up to Perk, and they were about to play the Clippers the next day or 2 days from then, and I was just writing something about the point guard matchup, and I was asking him about, you know, Rondo versus Paul. He just started saying, he said, Rondo thinks Chris is only good because he has the ball in his hands all the time. So I immediately tweet out that comment, and then they play each other 2 days later, and like, there's clearly animosity largely because of that, and it's only snowballed. Like, those guys really hate each other. So like at this point, go ahead, Kyle.
Oh yeah. I was just going to add one little touch to that point, and this has been rendered almost moot because Rondo isn't here, but imagine right now everyone's in the bubble, and LeBron James and Chris Paul are like best friends. So that, like, you assume at some point now that hotels can mix, they're hanging out a little bit. And, if Rondo was here, I'd be really interested in that dynamic.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that all kind of works moving forward, like teammates or players interacting, go fishing together, you know, or playing cards or whatever comes up. Before we get to the Lakers, let's talk about Lou Williams for a second. And as everybody knows by now, Lou Williams had an excused absence from the bubble. He went to the funeral of a family member. And during the time he was gone, he popped into Magic City, a strip club in the Atlanta area, which apparently has the best wings known to man. And he was caught on a photograph by a friend of his, and then it all kind of blew up from there. Lou Williams, as we speak, still serving his 10-day quarantine as a result of it. Tanya, what do you make of not just of the Lou Williams situation, but how the NBA handled it?
Well, today is National Wing Day. I don't know if you knew that, Chris. And the Lakers have tweeted out a promotion about wings that I'm sure they were planning before all this happened, but it's it's a good time. What was your actual question,
though? I mean, like, your I guess your reaction to Lou Williams. Like, Lou Williams knows exactly what's gone into creating this bubble. Yeah. He knows exactly the consequence of, you know, breaking the bubble and breaking protocol, and he still pops into Magic City to pick up his wings. So your reaction to that, and I guess then what you thought of the NBA's decision to give him that full 10-day quarantine.
I think the NBA did not have a choice. They had to do that. Because if they don't do that, then Rashawn Holmes is like, well, what? Why? Like, why did I have to go back to my room for 10 days? And he doesn't, when all I did was cross the street to get Postmates. I think Lou probably figured, like, you know, when we were asked to self-quarantine, we were told, like, you can pick up food, you can go to the grocery store. Like, there were limitations to the self-quarantine. You were allowed to do, like, the things that you normally do. And Lou probably, I mean, I haven't talked to him, but he probably figured that it would not be that big of a deal if he did this. But on the other hand, I totally understand the NBA's reaction, because they just can't take that risk. Like, they can't take the risk that, you know, like, what if Lou came back, and what if he did come in contact with, somebody who had it, and then enough that he got it, and then he comes into practice, and he practices, and, like, he gets tested when he comes back and does, like, whatever, the 4-day quarantine, let's say. I mean, the virus can incubate, it can take 5 to 14 days to incubate, most of the time 5 days, so... Now, like, he comes back to practice on the 5th day, and all of a sudden, now the virus is, you know, like, there's just, like, because of the way that this illness works, there's just so much at stake if you know that somebody was in a public space and you don't put them in this quarantine. So I get it. I actually get it from both perspectives here.
And Kyle, you're not going to get a lot of sympathetic ears for Lou Williams here inside this bubble. Like, from whether it's players, coaches, what have you, like, they don't feel much sympathy for Lou Williams. In fact, I had even been told that, you know, union officials up to Michelle Roberts were furious about this, because Michelle Roberts, you know, helped, or at least from what I was told, she, you know, pushed for Lou Williams to get the medical or the family exception to get out and go, you know, back to this funeral. So to treat it so flagrantly, I mean, Lou Williams, even if you believe his story that he just popped in and out to grab some wings, like, every player in this bubble would want to do that. Like, guys are already kind of climbing the walls here after just a few weeks. Every player would love a get out of jail free card to pop into his favorite restaurant and to, you know, go hang out for 24 hours away from all this. Like, you've got to know that if you're Lou Williams, don't you? Like, you can't.
Yeah.
Even if your story is dead on, like, that's it. You went for the wings. That still makes it completely inexcusable.
Right. So the optics of the strip club were bad because it's a strip club. But if he had been photographed by Jack Harlow, and a name that will go down in infamy, by the way, Jack Harlow at Fleming Steakhouse, like, in a booth, like, that's still not okay, right? I mean, that's still not, like, the idea of staying away from the public and protecting the integrity of the bubble. And, like, at this point, like, players have had so much reinforcement of what the NBA has tried to say, like, don't do this, don't do that. They had the little videos that they're supposed to watch with quizzes. You know, they had Mark Tatum when they came in here giving, you know, a seminar basically of, like, don't do this, don't do that. Like, they understand the seriousness of it. And it is a little alarming that Lou and, you know, his grandfather's passing, like, That's understandable that you would want to be there for that, but to kind of take it that extra mile. And it's weird also that I definitely understand why, like, I understand the motivation of feeling like I want something familiar, I want something from home, you know, that kind of thing. But I really wish the Clippers and Doc Rivers specifically would stop using this language of unintentional. Lou unintentionally broke protocol, like, as if, like, these guys haven't been warned a million times, Rashawn Holmes included, the unintentional, like, these guys were told not to leave their rooms. Like, I'm not sure that at this point you can say in any way that this is unintentional. Unfortunately, that's been the language that's been used.
Okay, but I will counter with this. Like, after that happened with Rashawn Holmes, I was, like, terrified to go anywhere. And, it's not as black and white, like, where the borders are, because this isn't this is a resort. It's not like a prison, right? Like, it's not, there are no, like, gates that say this is the border. I mean, I'm talking about Rashawn Holmes situation. Like, sure. I can see that you thinking, like, oh, this is okay because I'm still on this campus. You know, like, I can leave a little gray area there. Like, he intentionally asked Postmates to come bring him food. Yes. But I can see that there is some gray area with the rules there. Like, not everything. I mean, not to mention any names, but there was a reporter who broke the rules, who just didn't know what they were the first day that we got here, who wandered around taking pictures of the campus before they were like, you're supposed to be in your rooms the whole time. Like, there's been a lot that hasn't been 100% like that, like, if you're not, even if you are paying attention, there's a lot that changes or that you don't, that you don't for sure know is against the rules here.
Goon, were you wandering around campus taking pictures?
It was not Goon. But it's weird, and I feel like it needs to be acknowledged that it's weird that we as media members, I mean, we've all been to a Clippers scrimmage so far, right? And like, the first Clippers scrimmage was on the first night. Like, Lou Williams, one of the people being interviewed in a room. Like, it's kind of weird to think that at this time, these player decisions could have an impact on, like, us, the three people on this podcast. Like, that's a weird thing about the bubble that is just, has taken me time to kind of wrap my head around, that there's so much connectivity into how we're interacting inside it, and to a level that even as people, even the most connected insider, like, will not have experienced before.
I do love the unintentional language, though, when it comes to Lou Williams. Like, it's like, you know, somebody wrote this, though, about when the Dream Team unintentionally wandered into a brothel in Barcelona, which was 45 minutes away from where they were staying. Like, how do we wind up here? We're in a brothel. Oh, I guess we'll stay and have a drink. Just one drink, though. Nothing else inside the brothel. Tanya, should we be worried about the Clippers moving forward? I mean, I was kind of joking with you guys earlier this afternoon that if it's Clippers versus Thunder and six, like, and I'm only half joking, I guess, about something like that, because the Clippers are going into this with no continuity whatsoever. I mean, they haven't had a single day where they've had their entire roster, whether it's, you know, Patrick Beverley going out, Montrezl Harrell going out, Zubac just showed up, you know, for this whole experience. Now, you're not going to get Lou Williams back till at least the third game, and maybe longer, because it's not like he's in game shape hanging out in his hotel room. I mean, how concerned should the Clippers be about, you know, their ability to succeed in this environment now?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely at a disadvantage. I mean, they've definitely been dealing with something that most teams aren't dealing with, and that's going to be a problem for them. I asked Doc about this a few days ago, because I was like, does this give you pause about whether this will work? Because it's really, like, if you think about it, if there's a team where a lot of their players, I mean, before all this happened, like, everybody was, before Lou was caught picking up wings at Magic City, everybody was pretty sympathetic to the fact that, like, if you have a death in the family, like, the NBA shouldn't force you to miss it. The funeral, you know, they shouldn't, like, Marcus Morris said that he's got a son who's going to be born in September. Like, he said, I wouldn't miss it for the world. And that's completely reasonable. Like, that's something that he shouldn't have to miss, and that he wouldn't be missing if this situation weren't here. But then when those kinds of life situations happen, and I mean, what Doc pointed out was that under normal circumstances, a guy's gone. Maybe you don't even notice that the guy's gone. He's gone for a day or 2 days. Now it's like a whole week long process for somebody to duck out to deal with, like, a family situation or to, you know, and then there's the matter of, like, the positive test. Like, if like somebody tests positive, that's a whole other layer added to this. So, I mean, I think it has definitely put the Clippers at a disadvantage so far, because they just aren't able to get things to, you know, they just aren't able to be on the same page because of what you said. They just haven't had everyone here.
Kyle, how much value do you put in that continuity and being together? I mean, like, Oklahoma City, as I mentioned, has not been bit by the COVID bug. They feel like that's a big advantage for them going into this resume season. You know, when I sit in that Coronado Springs lobby and coaches and players, whatever, come up and just to talk, a lot of them bring up Milwaukee and say how great Milwaukee looks coming back into this. And one of the things that the Bucks front office guys will tell me is that, I mean, they had some minor issues with COVID. You know, Pat Connaughton, of course, just got into this mix, but they all wanted to be here. And people have different reasons for not wanting to be here, whether it's health, safety, family, different reasons. But the Bucks, from like day one, they were all kind of locked in on this. Like, they wanted to come down and finish what they started. How much value do you put in that aspect of this going into the season?
I think it matters for the same reason that Tanya was saying earlier, that this is going to be like a test of time. It's like, does your resolve strengthen or does it break down? And Doc Rivers said a couple interesting things today, actually. One of them was, I asked him whether the hardest thing for him to deal with now is either the break of the hiatus, the 4 months off, or the last 3 weeks of the team being every which way. And he said the last 3 weeks, because they don't have that continuity. So I think that illustrates, one, how seriously we should take that. That is a real obstacle and hurdle for their championship ambitions. And two, you know, I think of what another thing he said today, which is he was talking with another coach, and that coach, unidentified, said, well, if your team loves each other, they love each other more. If they hate each other, they really hate each other now. And it was a little bit of a joke, but I mean, that's kind of got to be the reality of it, especially when you think about the isolation these teams have with each other for, you know, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, potentially, for a team like the Bucks, a team like the Lakers, who, you know, even though they don't have Avery Bradley, like, LeBron's sort of leadership in wanting to come back and play, I think, spoke volumes to a lot of people on that team. So I think, you know, those teams, obviously OKC has their group together, and just a couple of the other more passionate teams that we've seen out there, I think it's going to be a real strength, especially in environments where you have to bring your own energy and benches have to be there. Benches really have to actually speak up for their teammates.
Denver's another one that could be in some trouble too. Like Mike Malone said on Wednesday, like, I don't have any idea who's going to play on Saturday. Like, it's at this point, when you're that uncertain, it could bode well or poorly for the future. Tanya, let's talk about the Lakers for a minute here. You know, there are two schools of thought when it comes to some of the changes they've had, with Avery Bradley being out and Rondo now being injured. There are people that think, wow, these are significant, impactful losses. They're going to hurt them, particularly Bradley, when the playoffs come around. There's another school of thought where it's like, okay, let's not overreact here. They still have LeBron James, Anthony Davis, two top five players that can overcome the talent gap that's between Avery Bradley and, say, J.R. Smith, or whoever, you know, fills in for Avery Bradley. What side of the fence do you fall on there?
Well, I think that they have been successful during the season. They were successful in replacing Avery Bradley and continuing to win while he was out. Their defense got worse, but they were still winning. I believe the stat is they went 17-3 with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope starting for Avery Bradley. There's a little positive and negative, but it was generally okay. You know, with Rondo, it's like that second unit during the season, there was a huge drop off as soon as LeBron left the game. It just was something that they couldn't figure out how to solve. I think that losing Rondo does hurt, and it changes your rotation in a lot of different ways. But it's also something that they probably can weather, at least for the first couple of rounds, where it becomes really important. And I think where their chemistry will become really important. So getting, you know, Avery's obviously gone for the whole time, but getting Rondo back and getting him back in time that they can really, they can figure out how their rotation is going to look once he's back, well before they have to, you know, if they make it to the finals, before they have to face the Milwaukee Bucks. Like I guess that's what I'm assuming is going to happen. But, you know, that's critical for them. They can do it, but a lot of too much like shuffling in and out might be difficult for them to overcome.
I feel like Rondo, Kyle, is going to be back like by the first round. Like, nobody plays through pain like Rajon Rondo. I've never seen anything like it. When, you know, covering him in Boston, when he went up against Miami with literally a broken arm, like a long cast on his arm. Like, I anticipate him coming back sooner rather than later. But I guess more the Bradley loss. Like, how significant is it for a team like this?
Yeah, I mean, just to build upon what Tanya said, the defense was not just worse, it was significantly worse, if you look at the defensive rating drop-off. So they were able to win. I wonder, though, if Kentavious Caldwell-Pope defensively I think one thing that helps the Lakers is that he's kind of similar in terms of how you know, they can place him on the court in relation to the other players, including LeBron. He's going to space a little bit. He's going to take the same guys Avery Bradley would have. But you wonder if the intensity is going to be there. I mean, Avery Bradley was a full court guy. So he might be a guy that, you know, defensively gets picked on. And when you think about the possibility that the Lakers could play Ja Morant or Damian Lillard, for example, in the first round, that's tough. There's not a great person to guard guys like that. And there are some really good ones, especially in the West. And Danny Green, although he's a very good defensive player, he's more of a wing, and he's a better help defender, off-ball defender, than an on-ball defender. So losing that guy, depending on the matchup, is going to create some major holes for playoff series. And Kentavious Caldwell Pope and Alex Caruso, I think, who's going to be probably the next man up, need to step up defensively in that regard.
Yeah, Portland first round series is must see TV. Like, I mean, I was at that game like you guys were on the Kobe night there, when Lillard, as an afterthought of that night, just went ballistic in that game. And he's capable, and Nurkic and Collins, from what I've seen, look pretty good. I'm not sure how many minutes they'll both play in this during the season, but you know, if they're back, that's a game changer for that team. And you know, the Melo narrative too makes it even cooler. Like, now Melo with a chance at redemption, you know, with the Portland Trailblazers one more time around. Before I let you guys go, the MVP voting, or the voting overall, is closed. It seems more likely than not that LeBron does not win MVP. I didn't vote for him. I couldn't come up with a real reason to vote for him. I mean, he's had a great year, the best age 35 year ever, but like every other statistical, you know, category falls in line with Giannis. I mean, Tanya, is there an argument for LeBron to win MVP over Giannis this year, or is this just one of those years where he was great, but the guy he's going up against was just superhuman?
Yeah, there's definitely an argument. I mean, the argument that people make, the argument that I don't have a vote, we don't at the LA Times, we don't vote in these awards. But the argument that you can make is kind of what he's meant to this team. And when people talk about MVP, they talk about what there's always that discussion. Is it the best player in the league, or is it the most important player to their team, the most valuable player to their team? And there were several times during the season when LeBron's leadership, both on and off the court, were really critical for this team holding itself together. And you also have to give him, you know, he was part of building this team. Like Rob Pelinka said over and over again, I didn't make any decisions without talking to LeBron James and Anthony Davis first. You know, they were helping to guide me. So, I mean, it isn't the traditional, you know, if you're somebody that's looking at numbers and, you know, the only looking at sort of the X's and O's impact, you know, I can see why you would hesitate to make this argument for LeBron, but I just think what he is, I mean, and that's not to say what he has meant to this team off the court has been really important, but there have been times where he's carried them physically, carried them on the in games. You know, there have been games, I mean, you look at the drop off for the Lakers after he leaves games, and that is a big on court argument for why LeBron James is MVP. But again, like I said, I don't have a vote, but this is the, you know, you asked if there is an argument for him to be MVP, and yes, this is the argument.
Kyle, what do you think?
Yeah, I also do not vote, but I've talked with several voters here, and another argument made for LeBron has been someone posed to me, if you had to win a pickup game today, or a 5-on-5 game today, and you had first pick, who would you pick? And these voters say LeBron James. And I actually kind of agree with that, especially where you think where we left off, where LeBron just exercised this control, especially against Giannis in that win over the Bucks. I mean, that fourth quarter of that game was pretty masterful when you look at just all the elements that happened, the defensive intensity, which is a lot of times coached on by LeBron. He's the communicator And he has the ability to control the half court better than Giannis. And that was exposed directly. But I don't think LeBron should get extra credit because he's old. I think that is one kind of weird thing about that argument that, like, I mean, it's amazing, right? It is an amazing thing that he is having the best age 35 season ever. I looked at the numbers. I don't think there's been anyone who's had a 20-10 season even close to that at this age. And I also think Giannis statistically just kind of blows him away. And the other thing that happened with LeBron is Anthony Davis joined the team. And the Lakers, with just LeBron last year, even though he was injured and there's definitely like a lot of factors that went into that season and what happened last year, like the Lakers were not what they are now. And I think you have to point to the Anthony Davis trade as a crux. So it would be an interesting conversation to approach LeBron and say, hey, would you rather win MVP or Executive of the Year for helping maneuver and create this team? But you know, I do think LeBron in some ways is underappreciated. He probably should have more MVPs than he does, but I don't really see it for this year. I understand the argument, but I'm not convinced.
Yeah, I mean, these are good arguments for LeBron. The numbers for Giannis are just ridiculous. Like, he's having the kind of offensive season we haven't seen since Shaq in the early 2000s, and he might win Defensive Player of the Year. I've seen a bunch of people already say they voted for him already, so I don't know. I get the feeling it could be a pretty landslide based on what Tim Bontemps did, a straw poll back in March or April, and you know what I hear now. I think it's a lot of these votes going to be for Giannis, but
35 is an old goon.
Not that old.
For a basketball player, it's on the upside. What's 40? What's 40 in that matter? Anyway, guys, thanks for joining me. You can follow Tanya, Kyle's coverage all throughout the NBA playoffs. They're down here in the bubble for what seems like forever. So I'll see you guys at dinner with a little campfire later. You want to like hang out? You know?
Yeah, sounds good.
Card game. I heard of card games in the works. How's it going?